Welcome to the podcast. My name is Danny Cola. If this is your first time listening, make sure to hit subscribe on your favorite podcast platform so that you can join me in having some epic conversations that access higher levels of potential with creatives and professionals from all around the globe. Thank you so much for tuning in. Today's guest is celebrity fitness trainer Mark Wildman. He specializes in coaching heavy clubs, kettlebells, and mobility. If you want to learn more about Mark Wildman, check out his YouTube channel at Mark Wildman. I personally have used his YouTube channel for a long time now, learning how to coach people up on heavy clubs, kettlebells, and certain mobility drills. He's a wealth of knowledge. We recorded this podcast in Vista, Italy, where we were part of the Human Fit Project, which was a series of seminars over a stretch of days. We did heavy clubs, we did Landmine University, we did kettlebell, we did a hydro core, and we did several other modalities, learning about fitness, health, wellness, different ways to apply some of these modalities. It was an amazing time. Personally, I got to know Mark on another level. We lived in a house together for 5 days, making coffee when we woke up in the morning and doing laundry, eating egg frittatas out in the back. It was a wonderful time just talking about health, fitness, wellness, human history, and overall longevity and performance. When we get together during these seminars, the idea is how can we come together, share some of these modalities and ideas in the fitness industry that are happening right now, and how can we share them with people to ultimately help them better their lives. So we have an awesome conversation here. This is just kind of a little bit of what happened the last 5 days when we were in Vista, just kind of shooting the shit. But here we have a good conversation about developing skills and mastery and why that's important throughout your life. So enjoy this conversation.
My friend would come over with his camera and he would edit them and do everything. He started the whole thing. He was like, all the weird shit you say during training is fucking genius, and we should record it and put it on YouTube. And I was like, ah, sure, whatever. And so we would do them between movies, like randomly on a Saturday. He'd be like, I'm by your house, let's make a video. So you'll notice they're extremely inconsistent, and the editing is way, way better and color corrected. He was shooting on like a 5D with like the Nat Geo lens, whereas I'm just shooting with whatever I can actually carry in my pocket. So there it's different, but
yeah,
there were like 3 years of one video every 6 months or something.
And that's the thing, like you start something and then after you start it, then you perfect it over time. There's a lot of people, and I'm guilty of this, like
they think that they have to be perfect on the way out. Absolutely. Or they won't do it.
Absolutely. Like paralysis by analysis too. If I'm not perfect, I won't start it, I won't do it.
Yeah.
But here I'm kind of like forced to be the technician, the lead podcaster, the editor, the uploader, the fucking trainer at the gym, the person who manages everything, the person who's coming up with ideas and keeping everything balanced and all that. So,
but you're learning. The main thing is that you're learning. Yeah. You're learning on accident. So that this is the thing that I figured out is nobody can tell you what it takes better than you. So you know, somebody's like, oh, it's going to cost $5,000. You're like, no, dude, that's going to cost $50.
Right.
So people oftentimes have the special. Are we recording this?
I just put a record just for right now.
That's great, though. We should have people have the keys to specialized knowledge and something that's super easy because they are because they have the special knowledge and you don't, they can charge a premium for it.
Totally.
So if you really want to like do a lot of stuff, then having the knowledge to tell when somebody's trying to hustle you is pretty important.
Yeah, for sure. And before I started making money, I was still doing it all myself, but now that I'm making money, my solution tends to be just throw the fucking money at it and it'll get taken care of. But I've learned really quickly that that's not the case. That's not the case.
Like, you can throw money at a problem forever and never get anywhere because you don't know if the person is actually solving the problem in the correct way.
Totally.
People lie to you all the time and do absolutely nothing. This is something I saw a lot in Hollywood in the film industry. Mm. People will tell you they're doing something. I swear to God, some projects never get done because the writer has had it for 12 months. Like, what was he doing for 12 months? Was he working 8 hours a day? Like, I don't know. But I've seen that happen a ton where something goes out for rewrites and it doesn't come back for 2 years. And you're like, what is going on over there?
Is this ever going to get made? Is this ever going to be something that gets actually put into existence? Is this going to be something that people could actually listen to and enjoy and all that? And
I think that there's so much focus now on everything being right and perfect. But like, I kind of miss the 80s where you just made some shit. You know, like I love 80s action movies because you can tell it was like they wrote it over a weekend and then somebody was like, we're going to shoot it in Thailand. Like all the early Van Damme movies are like that. They're fucking hilarious because you can tell they were just like, we're going to shoot right here. And they just like had access to a dock for one night and they were like, do a backflip and kick somebody through a box. And it's amazing. You can tell that they're all like super short shoots. But so those are still some of the most influential movies of an entire generation because they went out and they made a ton of them. You know, and they made one of these things every 3 to 6 months. And then Van Damme, with all these low-budget action movies, became a name that everybody in the world knew because they just did it.
Yeah.
Which and I think is pretty good.
It's yeah,
good
for strategy. Sure. You have to do it consistently, though.
Yes, right? It has to be consistent. This is another problem I see people doing.
It's a problem for me.
Is they do one really good thing, then they don't do anything else for 2 years. And it's like... And this is something that I think is happening a lot. It was once again a Hollywood thing, is like Denzel Washington became like one of the greatest actors of all time because he put out 2 to 3 movies a year for 10 to 15 years. Mm. You know, they weren't all great, but that's the way I remember it. If I go back and look at his film log, maybe that's not true, but I felt like there was almost always a Denzel Washington movie coming out when I was young. There was always a movie, and the majority of them were good movies.
Yeah.
And I don't see that level of output from the movie industry that way anymore.
Movie industry, training industry, whatever, tech industry, at the end of the day, it's got to be consistent or else you're not really learning much. Because, you know, there's that curve, you get there. I mean, you learn stuff after doing it consistently, but just like training, if you stop for a little while, you kind of got to go back from scratch and figure things out again. And that's what I've been doing with the podcasting, really. I started it in 2017, okay? And I didn't have any agenda. And then when I started kind of doing it on my own, I started it with a partner. It worked out for like 30 episodes. Then I started doing it on my own. And I was really consistent with it on my own. But that back then when I was doing it on my own, I wasn't really training nearly as much. But now you start training 6 hours a day. And then after you're done training, I don't want to spend any more mental bandwidth on anything else. So too many days in a row, I'd be like, ah, fuck it. I'll do it later. And then 2 years goes by and I didn't fucking do one episode.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Are you sound mastering these yourself now?
Well, yes. But like I said, it hasn't been super consistent. I was hard in the paint from 2017 to like 2020. Then, you know, I was kind of shifting my career, my business and things started growing during the pandemic, which is interesting because like during the pandemic, it either you stopped doing everything that you were doing or you shifted hardcore and did something else and focused on shit. But yeah, at the end of the day, you got to be consistent and you got to keep on going or else again, you got to just keep, you have to start from scratch again. And it's frustrating for me. But at the end of the day, like I like wearing many hats when I'm at the, you know, the 10 year mark or the 20 year mark, I can say I wore all the hats.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
The most important thing is that you know how to do everything a little bit so you understand all those things.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that that is the best way to get good at anything.
Yeah.
Is to learn it from the ground up. They used to do that. They put you in the mail room and they make you deliver mail. And then they put you in the next department up. And you essentially did like a tour in every department on your way up. Because then you understand what it takes to do each job. And it's just good management style.
Totally. And you appreciate it. Yeah. Like, I appreciate so much more now that, like, you know, I was the cleaner of the gym and the fucking, like I said, the trainer, the manager, the guy who put up all the, made up all the ideas and then put those ideas into action. I'm doing it all on my own. And later on, when I have people hired for this type of stuff, I can say, like, dude, I did every fucking thing possible to get this up and going. And that's essentially what it takes to get something great brewing.
Yeah.
Something great that's actually impactful for other people.
100%
agree. And if you just kind of got thrown at the top of it all, there's less appreciation, there's less gratitude.
Oh, I saw that right. I knew a guy in Hollywood and he kind of knew some people, so he tried to jump straight to producer. and it did not go well. It was a complete, utter, unmitigated disaster.
Yeah.
Because he didn't do the things you're supposed to do.
He didn't take
the steps. You're supposed to go, you be a PA on set, you do all the shit jobs for two or three movies, you run around, they make you go places, but you learn the structure. Who does what job? Who do you talk to? Who do you talk to in what order? The hierarchy of things. Mm-hmm. You try to get to that third AD position where you just like get actors from the trailer to the set. Super important job. 15, 16, 20 hours a day for 6 months. And then you try to get up to that second, and then you're in the office. And then you get up to that oft coveted like first AD position where you're basically there calling the shots on set and acting the will of the director. And then from there, you figure out all these things. Some point in there, after you've done all those jobs, it's really easy to make that jump to producer.
Absolutely.
Because you know how much everything costs. You know the rules of all the unions in all the different regions. You know, in New York, you have one type of union. The travel guys in this part of the country require this much time. There's this much turnaround. Doing all that stuff. When people try to jump right to the top, they have no clue what any of those rules are. And then it makes it almost impossible for people to enact any type of vision because they don't know the steps to make sure something gets enacted.
Imagine if you were like out of the gate teaching a 4-hour workshop.
Oh, then you would
die. When you never taught one-on-ones, you never taught our small group classes, you never taught our big group classes, right? You can't just jump into 2-day, 8-hour seminars.
No, you'll absolutely die.
You will fall flat on your face.
It took me 15 years before I really got to the point where I was like, I feel like I can confidently make sure that I'm ensuring that people are getting the value that they showed up
totally.
For. Totally. 15 years, one-on-ones, travel training, working with high-level clients, working with low-level clients, working with all these people. You need to see every population ahead of time so you make sure you know how to communicate effectively to those. And then you got to manage a seminar. A seminar is teaching in blocks, and you have to make sure you're communicating effectively for 8 hours at a time. I mean, we do 8.5, and my like OODA Loop staff seminar is all observe, orient, decide, act. It is super hard on the brain. I have to sleep for like 3 days after it's over. But you need 15 years of experience to even pull that off, or you will die. Somebody will die.
How do you explain this message to youth, though? I think the youth today, kids today, they just want to be at the top because they've been taught that, conditioned for instant gratification and instantaneously being the man on day one. So, like, is the only way to, like, get that message out to the youth is through podcasts, is through online content, or just having conversations with them and mentorship? Like, I think that's a very important message for young people to hear and people in general just to hear.
I think it's incredibly important. And I think that people will only listen to that after something has gone horribly wrong and they have tried to skip right to the top and they have fallen flat on their face. And that's why most people will never make it to somewhere near the top, because they fall down one time and instead of self-analyzing and looking at what they're doing and saying, wow, I didn't know enough about the basics, they try to jump careers and try to jump to the top of something else. I see that a lot. People do one thing, they don't do it well, so they jump careers after 2 years, and then they end up never doing anything well and kind of never getting anywhere.
Yeah.
Because instead of being like, wow, I didn't know enough of the basics, and taking a step down and acknowledging, I've seen this a ton in Hollywood. People are just want to, like, they just say that they're a director, which is my favorite thing. They just say they're a director. Mm-hmm. They never directed anything. Nobody will give them any money to direct anything.
Yeah,
but they really like to say it at a bar.
Yeah, for sure.
It sounds cool. They maybe get some laid 2 or 3 times and then they try to run on that. But they're not a director because they never actually directed anything. They're not in the director's guild. They didn't go through the director mentorship program.
Yeah.
They didn't start as a PA. They don't even know what happens on set.
Yeah.
And you've seen some examples of this in recent years and in the film industry where they get a director in there and the whole project falls apart or it goes way over budget and you never hear that guy's name ever again.
Yeah. So, like, okay, then you can apply this type of thing to even your fitness journey, your fitness goals, right?
Hell yeah.
There are young kids and even people that are, you know, adults that live through their lives of 40s, 50s, 60s. They want a shortcut. We want a pill, a quick fix to get us healthy. When you know, guys like you and I have been in the industry for a long time. There's no such thing as a fucking quick fix. You're not going to have the body of your dreams. You're not going to be super mobile and out of pain just by one time doing anything or by taking a pill. It's not going to get you there. But it seems to be like 18-year-old kids, they want to jump on TRT or HGH right away to get a fucking man's body with little bit of time put in, get there faster and faster, faster than anybody else. And again, they're not going through the whole process of 15, 20 years of building their bodies to get to that point where they're actually structurally sound, and they have a foundation that they can build upon. They're building something big on a shitty foundation, and that's how shit crumbles, no?
That is exactly how everything crumbles. I am obsessive about like what it takes to be a trainer, and I have like a very specific list of things, of core skills that I think that people need to have, and it's very rare to see people do them. You do, you're about 95% of what I recommend. The thing that you're still working on a little bit is what your club coaching, bringing it up to the highest level mm-hmm. possible, but mm-hmm. you're still in the top, 5% of club coaches in the world. You know,
I never really thought of it like that, but
there's not many. I mean, it's crazy how bad the majority of coaches are, though. Like, it's shocking. Like, somebody who watches my YouTube channel and watches half of it and does it is probably the best trainer in their state, even if they're not a professional trainer, because the language is used in a specific way and the core skills are taught in such a way. The whole thing's a giant neurological trick to try to trick the world into improving itself on accident. Because I don't know, that's my goal. But most people are not willing to do that work. And that's why most people are never get really far. You do see a lot of these people try to like get into fitness, and within 3 years, they're going to have a big brand and a big company. And some of them get a lot of traction in the beginning.
Yeah.
But a lot of them just fizzle out because there's no underpinning. Once again, they probably not prepared with their coaching technique in order to teach a 2-day seminar.
Yeah, totally. Life is weird. Life is weird. People are different. People are interesting. The way they think about the world, the way they think about getting ahead, whatever the fuck that even means, you know?
I think the best way to get ahead is to stop trying to fucking get ahead.
And just like work on things day by day, one brick at a time.
Yeah, actually basically. Be good at your job and actually care about outcomes.
Yeah.
And actually be trying to do a job well. I mean, that is shockingly rare in the modern world.
That's true. I'm a huge fan of Joe Rogan, and he basically talks about how, I mean, obviously he's a really hard worker and super consistent, but he goes, I never intended for any of this to be like this. Number one podcast in the world, number one comedian in the world, number one brand in the world. Like, it all happened by accident. And that's basically just by day by day, week by week, being consistent, putting out quality podcasts, putting out quality content, writing jokes, getting on the road, all that stuff.
Yeah.
After 25, 30 years, you find yourself in a position that is quote unquote the top of the world or whatever, like high up, super successful, whatever that looks like. But yeah, it really is the day in, day stuff. And I think you do have to forget about getting to the top.
You have to forget about giving to the top, and you have to learn to be self-directed. Almost nobody is self-directed, I think, in the beginning. You have to learn to be self-directed. Yeah. You have to learn how to be consistent and work hard. And you have to learn to value for your own self what doing a better job actually means. Mm. Are you objectively looking at what you do and trying to do it a little bit better every day?
Yeah.
A lot of people check out and they have a job and they try to not get better at it, or they actively try to get worse at it.
Like, or coast, you know?
The whole concept of quiet quitting makes me kind of sick inside, because it seems like the concept of quiet quitting is where you just do less and less and less until you, but still collect a paycheck, which to me is fundamentally dishonest for yourself. Like, why wouldn't you want to do a good job?
Right.
I mean, this is the Bhagavad Gita. Like, they wrote this down thousands of years ago, that whatever your job is, you should do it well. Vishnu talking to Prince Arjuna in the chariot overlooking the battlefield and saying everybody has a job and everybody should be good at doing their job. That means if you're a janitor, you be a good janitor. You don't quite quit being a janitor. I swept a barn for years. Mm. And my God, my sweeping technique is amazing because I made it my mission to sweep the horse barn every day perfectly, with less strokes, with a more fine technique, like obsessive.
Yeah, well, it's a testament to like how you're living your life right now and doing the work that you're doing. When I was a high school teacher, it really frustrated me because like I was trying to get a good job at a great school, you know, good paycheck, a lot of resources within the school, a diverse group of people and kids there, and you know, different types of sports and different types of extracurricular activities. I was trying really hard and I struggled to find that job and stick there with it. But when I was doing these like temp jobs, these what do they call long-term substitute jobs, where I was in a building for a year and I didn't know if I was going to be back, I found these teachers that were tenured and there for a long time really check out. And that's what they were doing. They were collecting a paycheck. They were talking shit about the whole system. And
who wants to be that person inside? If that person cannot be happy. And more importantly, I think that they're happy being unhappy or something like that. To just actively no longer attempt to do your job is horrifying to me as a personal concept.
Especially when there's fucking kids that are looking up to you every single day. What kind of example is that? Like,
I would never, ever, 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 ever collect a fucking paycheck if I didn't feel like I had done my job.
You want to talk about dying quickly. You know? That's it. I mean, you got 1 foot in the fucking grave already.
Yeah, you might as well just go out back and just take yourself out of the gene pool in some way. It's crazy. Like, a quiet quitting thing drives me absolutely bonkers. And nobody should take themselves out of the gene pool. But, like, that's a philosophical discussion.
Yeah. Yeah, dude, I don't know. Life is weird.
Life is weird. Life is fun and glorious and long and short. And everything good happens in life. You know, the human experience is unique. And years are long, but years are also incredibly short. But I try to live by that adventure, whatever that adventure is. Mm. It's the only thing that you really do. The humans are adventure seekers. And it doesn't have to be climbing Mount Kilimanjaro or going to the bottom of the ocean. It's just going down any street you've never been down and not looking at your phone. It's mapping your area and attempting to learn something new. We're here in Italy right now, and we both come on this adventure to the other side of the world just to do a bunch of weird stuff. We found an excuse to go to the other side of the planet, and it's not entirely clear how you get here or how you get away or what the food's going to be like or what the sleeping situation is and how long the days are going to be.
Especially if Mauricio's in charge.
But it's an adventure, and it's worth it every single time.
Yeah. That was one. So I saw a video that you posted shortly before I got here, and you were talking about Human Fit Project. You talked about coming to Italy, and you said that it's important in a fitness journey to do that, to find a way to get to somewhere else in the world, get there, learn some new things, meet new people. Why is that important to you, and why is that good for somebody that's trying to become better when they have like fitness goals and they have other types of mental, physical, emotional goals, whatever. Why is that important to you?
I base this all on Joseph Campbell because I am
the hero's journey.
Of a nerd. It's a hero's journey. And what we're doing is these are micro hero's journeys. There are no rites of passage in Western culture for the most part. Some people go to the Marines and they have a rite of passage, right? Some people go to the military and they get a rite of passage. But for normal people, going to university is not a rite of passage. It's mostly just getting drunk.
Yeah, it's a four-year party, basically.
It's a four-year party. But one rite of passage is no longer enough. Every new phase of your life should have a new rite of passage.
I like that.
And I think that every year is a new phase of your life. And for me, it's become even shorter than that. Every 3 months can become a new phase of your life. So I've been on, I don't know, I think this might be my fifth or sixth one of these journeys of self-improvement that I've done since the beginning of this year.
Oh, wow.
So I am making it an active part of my life. The hero's journey is you have the call to adventure, you leave home, you refuse the call to adventure, or wait, how does it go? The call to adventure happens, you refuse the call to adventure. At some point, you have to accept the call to adventure. You go on a journey. not knowing a bunch of stuff. You usually meet a bunch of people along the way who become allies to you in certain, in some way. You do something you've never done before. At the end of it, you are different in a different way, and you can return home a new person.
Yes.
That is my super short abridged version of like the 8 core steps of the hero's journey. And this is like that.
Exactly.
These are all like that. I designed seminars to be that way because most people don't have any type of, what did I call it? What's the word? Journey to heroes. What am I saying?
It's a...
call it a rite of passage.
Rite of passage, heroes. Right.
I can't even remember my own
That's
words.
Okay. That's okay.
Most people have never done a rite of passage, so they never grow up, truly. People who never leave their hometown. You can leave your hometown, go to the Marine Corps or go to the Army or go to the Air Force and come back. You've had a giant hero's journey. You went someplace, you did something hard, you met a bunch of new people, you acquired a new set of skills. Eventually, you come home to your small town. Awesome. Love it. Know a ton of guys like that. I'm pushing the concept of hero's journey to be that lifelong journey because I want to live a really cool life.
Yeah.
Because I grew up in the middle of nowhere and there was never an opportunity. And I was always waiting for the epic hero's journey, right? That was the Lord of the Rings. But the Lord of the Rings is the first hero's journey in Lord of the Rings is them just getting to Bree to the end of the Prancing Pony. Right. That's the whole first journey that they go on where, God, we're going to, yeah, let's just go ahead and talk about Lord of the Rings.
Go for it. I'm not too familiar. I haven't watched it. No, okay. I haven't watched it.
You got to watch it. It's super fun because there's tons of heroes' journeys inside of it and all characters go through their own different versions of hero journeys and then they break into their own micro heroes' journeys along the way. So I always thought that there was going to be this big one. And I eventually realized sometime in college that there was no big one. I left Ohio. I went all the way across the country to USC. And I still wasn't happy because I was still living inside this little bubble of what I was supposed to do. So like at the end of college, I went to the beach, shaved my head, got on a bike I bought at REI, and I rode to San Francisco. And then I turned into the wind like an idiot. And rode across the mountains and then eventually got to Ohio. And it was a hero's journey that was just meant to be awful. There was basically pre-cell phone. It was 2004. You had like a flip phone, but there was no signal. You had no data. You had no maps. You just went and you had to go. You didn't get to stop in the middle of Kansas. You were 50 miles from anywhere and no one was coming to save you. And you had to put yourself out there. And then when you wanted to quit and you wanted to stop, there was no way to stop. I was too poor to stop. I only had, I think I spent $8 a day on food.
Well, you put yourself in situations where you're forced to like figure out how you're going to get out there and make it across or get to your destination.
And that changes who you are for sure. As a person. It makes you more resilient. It makes everything about the way you think better. Fitness journeys, most people just want to get abs. And then they wonder why their life is never different. They might get abs for 3 months and then they revert back to their old lifestyle because they didn't go away and do something. Yes. We first met where? Maui Fit?
Maui Fit, 2 years ago.
Yeah, two years ago. I was on a giant hero's journey on accident after losing everything in COVID, shutting down my studio, going to the mountains.
We all were.
Going to the mountains of Colorado, living in a fucking cabin, going then on a journey back towards California to live in Pine Mountain Club up in the snow. And that's when I got the call. Maurizio called me and said, hey, let's go to Maui Fit. I'm doing this thing because nobody's doing stuff. And thank God for Maurizio forcing a bunch of people to do something.
It's so simple. You just put the water inside the bag.
Love that guy.
The biggest part of that, though, is the returning home with information. I think this is a big part. Because I've noticed this in myself. I've been going on different fitness retreats since 2019, maybe even before then. And after every single one of them, I'm electric. It's unexplainable. I feel electric. I feel like I have ideas. I feel like I could take the information. And I put myself in a position to take the information that I've learned abroad and share it with people.
Yeah.
And like.
But now you're not just on a hero's journey. now you're fulfilling like the 4-point cycle of life or something from, once again, I'm back in like Vedic philosophy.
Give me it. I really enjoy talking to you because you bring up so many different types of historical pieces of information that I'm just ignorant to.
Let's go to what is the definition of mastery, right? So you have to practice, you have to be taught, you have to practice / compete, and then you have to teach. So by coming on this hero's journey, we're being exposed to a bunch of skills. I teach a club workshop. There's a kettlebell workshop. We'll have HydroCore. We have Landmine University. All of these skills interconnect in some way, and we can talk about how it can interconnect, because I can talk about this forever. And then you learn all of those things. You meet all these people. We met at Maui Fit. We still talk.
Yeah.
Everybody who's staying here at Maui Fit, G Money Mustache, Will Safford, we named ourselves. We made a group name, Speed Force Vector, because we're that nerdy. And
glad to join the Speak Voice Vector or whatever.
Speed Force Vector. Yeah, we made ourselves a little logo, like, and we still call ourselves that. And we travel around the world and bullshit. Man. But you meet all those people. Then you have to go back home. And then part of internalizing that is to then try to communicate that information to other people. There's your 3 parts of mastery. You have to be taught. You have to practice / compete. And then you have to try to teach it. So you're in the perfect position owning a gym. You go to all these things. You come back with this new knowledge, having met a bunch of people, gone to a new place, had this great micro adventure that changes the way you are forever. Yeah. And then you come back and you implement it. And the good thing is you don't do it once. You've been going. We're going to keep doing this. I'm sure we'll be doing this human fit thing. We're going to do this
or versions of it.
Versions of it. Yeah. If Mauricio stops doing it, we'll start doing it.
This place in Viesta is unfucking believable.
Have you swam around the point yet?
No.
So you can get in the ocean in the center of town and swim around the battlements of the walled city and come up the other side into the old town inside the wall at the castle, which is quite possibly one of the best swims you would ever have in your life. And you don't even know what's gonna happen. And that's the point of adventure.
Yeah.
You just go, hey, can I swim around that point? And they go, yeah. And so you just take off your clothes in the middle of town, stuff them underneath a rock on the beach, swim around the city, walk back through the city in your shorts wet. Everybody looks at you like you're a psychopath because I'm a giant meaty American.
Yeah, you're big as fuck.
And I come back, grab my stuff back out of a rock, and then walk home. It's a great adventure. That's an adventure every day. That's awesome.
Yeah, dude. Viesta is fucking... Southern Italy is phenomenal. It's a beautiful place. There's so many awesome people. The way buildings are constructed, the streets, just the fact that we're up on this hill overlooking the Adriatic coast.
Oh, you want to talk about why I think America is inevitably going to decline?
I mean, I was going to say that for the last part of the podcast.
No. Can I throw this in here? Because we're right on this. So, architecture. The piazza is what I think defines Italy. The big square with a bunch of stuff around it. And the one crucial mistake that Renaissance and Enlightenment thinkers made when they transferred those ideas to North America with the founding fathers was they didn't do the piazza. They did a town square and they put a government building in the center of it, which I think is the death knell. It's inevitable that North American culture does not last in its version the way that Italy has lasted for hundreds of years, thousands of years, right?
I never thought of it like that.
Because there is no central part of every town. There are 5 piazzas in Vieste, and each one of those is a piazza linked to another piazza linked to another piazza. And you go out there at 12 p.m. at night, and there are just people hanging out in this community thing. The doors overlook it. They're all paved with marble, so they're clean. They're always clean. It's always a place you can be in. In America, you have the road that goes around the government building, all the buildings on the outside, but you can't see across it to see your neighbors. You're looking at just the oppressive government building in the center of town. Yeah. And I think that will destroy it. The next thing I think that will destroy it is tarmac. or blacktop streets.
Yeah, yeah, I'm with you.
Tarmac, any part of Yeste where they have put in tarmac instead of the original paved roads does not feel as awesome at all. But Vieste, I compare the way that Vieste feels in Old Town to Caixa, Portugal, which has the most beautiful bricked, vertical brick, like 4x4 stones that go straight down into the earth. One of them breaks, they pull it out, they drop in a new one. It's an infinitely adjustable, reliable system. But just a small town becomes the most magical place because of that one thing. The surface of the road itself changes absolutely everything about it. The piazza and the surface of the road changes the way all culture works. And I think that that one problem, had they taken a government building and put it on one side of the square, like in Back to the Future, where there's the park in the middle and the clock tower is on one side and then everybody sees each other, that movie doesn't work. Though all of the things that happen in Back to the Future 1 and 2 don't work if the center square isn't open. Mm. But like everywhere in Ohio, I don't know of one open central square. I actively started looking for it after I came to Italy in like 2018. I started driving my motorcycle to small towns, just like every small town. There's thousands of them, I think. Hundreds, gotta be hundreds at least. And they're every 5 or 10 miles apart, which is about as far, the close ones are as far as you could ride a horse from sun up to noon, and the far ones are sun up to sundown horse distance, because it was all settled in the early 1800s when everybody was doing horses in court. So they didn't want to get caught on the road, so they kind of went these specific distances.
Yeah, it's just, it's awesome.
But I can't find a piazza anywhere in Piazza.
Yeah.
Anywhere in America.
I think about Chicago. It's a grid.
It's a grid.
It's hard to put an open square on things that are make like a grid, because
they could have just left one square open, but they just didn't.
Mm. I mean, I don't even know if it was well thought out. I mean, it's interesting with the government buildings in the middle. Like, I noticed that even in my little town where I have my gym, we have an uptown downtown area, and there's the government building, City Hall, Town Hall, right in the center of it. Yeah, we have little parks and like open fields and stuff like that, and little shops and people eating outside. But yeah, it's strange. Like, why?
I think if you want to save the world, you build everything around a piazza and you pave it with paving stones. Could be bricks. The cooler they look, the more likely the area is to be awesome forever.
Stone streets are pretty cool.
Stone streets are cool. They could be brick streets. They just can't be red brick streets. Mm. They could gray brick streets, I think, have an entirely different effect on the brain. I think red brick streets, they did that for a while in America, and they paved over them all because it, like, the way that it looked, I think, messes with the brain.
Mm.
This is just me and my total weird theories.
Yeah, it's all good. Well, yeah, we're here in Vieste. We did several workshops already the last 3 days. We did some kettlebell. We did your club workshop. We did some landmine. Specifically, landmine and clubs. How do you think that they complement each other so nicely? Like, why do you think they complement each other so nicely? And like, why would they be effective movements to teach your everyday person to feel better, move better? Because I think I feel,
how nerdy do you want this answer to be?
I mean, I want the nerdiest version of Mark Wildman. It's because, listen,
I'm going to give you middle of the road. Nerdy.
Give me middle of the road nerdy, but to preface this with, like, I'm very passionate about these exercises. I do them every single day. And on top of the fact that, like, going back to the hero's process, the hero's journey, since I've been doing that the last 4 years, my workouts have been very minimal, not super hardcore. I work out hard maybe 2 times a week. But other than that, it's just like, you know, picking up stuff with clients for 8 hours a day slowly. And I've looked the best that I've ever looked. I feel the best I've ever felt. I have a clear mind. I'm in tune with the things that I want to do with my life, you know? And I think clubs and landmine and fascial exercises have a lot to do with it, on top of the fact that I do the hero's journey stuff. It feels really good. But from a biomechanics point, like, why is it so complementary to each other?
Let me give you this. I'm gonna start in the 1890s.
Okay. We'll start there and then move our way to here.
2023. I talk about this a lot. I'm sure I'm saying this guy's name wrong. George Herbert, George Herbert is French, I think.
Herbert.
I don't know how to say that, but he was the guy who essentially, he traveled around the world and he identified 10 human movements. And he was looking for why Europeans were not in nearly as good a shape as the people in tribes in Africa. That was a time of major conflict between European nations and African nations, right? African peoples, however you want to say that. You know, you have the various wars, the Zulu Wars, the Boer Wars, all this other stuff, and kind of in that time frame. And he wanted to know why Europeans were, with all of their superior technology, were not doing nearly as well in his perception as native populations. So he looked at what they were doing and he identified 10 things. And it's... where do we start? Walking, running, vaulting, which is jumping with the use of the hands, quadruped movement, throwing patterns, lifting and carrying, balancing. I'm missing one of the 8 that make up parkour here somehow. I'm missing one, but then last 2 were... Yeah, swimming and fighting, which are kind of harder to do for everybody. Swimming requires...
So these were the 10 basic movements that...
These were the 10 basic things. And then he created the system of natural training, the natural system of training. And that was what led to the foundation of military training and obstacle courses in the military. Obstacle courses in the military have... You get over a wall, you crawl underneath a thing, you climb a rope, you do these things. And then different militaries around the world have different versions of that. The French Foreign Legion having the craziest version of that, which is what led to the evolution of parkour. Some things in the modern world, you go to a gym and you kind of do lifting, but you rarely do carrying. And you might do running, but all the other stuff is out, right? There's no, almost nobody does quadruped movement in the gym. Something like animal flow is a hyper-focused idea on quadruped movement. Something like gymnastics or floor work for BJJ is another version of quadruped movement and ground engagement. Those things are filled in some other way, and people picked out one thing and they just do animal flow. And then they kind of leave out everything else. In animal flow, they leave out lifting and carrying. They leave out throwing.
Patterns. Yeah, this is a very common human trait. They just go into one thing and
get
not really
super good at it.
Yeah, not really dabble into anything else, and also maybe become, ill will towards other stuff. This is the only way that we can train, which is, healthy.
The thing that I see that covers the most stuff is heavy club swinging. So when I think about what I teach, people walk every day, or they should, right? Most people cannot run effectively because they can't stand effectively in the modern world, because we are victims of the success of our society. And for the most part, we don't have to work to stay alive anymore.
We're victims to the success of our society.
We are the great recipients of energy slaves. So instead of having to wash something by hand, we have a washing machine that does our will for us through the use of electricity, which is generated on the other side of the planet and transferred to us across wires. Yeah, I'm a nerd.
No, but it's true. I mean, we're comfortable in our temperature-controlled houses.
We sit in chairs at tables, yeah. And we lean forward and look at screens where some magical crystal is literally beaming information across the surface of the planet, probably through outer space, back down to entertain us or give us something, right? We essentially live in the age of magic and just nobody noticed. Right. The fact that your phone holds that much data, can do that much stuff, it's a magic piece of glass. It's glass. It's a magic piece of glass. There's a couple of people on the world who physically understand how the electrons are interacting with the surface chemistry of these elements in order to magically communicate a video to us within a microsecond from the other side of the planet. Right. It's magic.
Yeah.
Right. So we are victims of this concept. We all just generally take the easy way out. We drive a car to work. We could ride a bicycle 20 miles to work each way, but we just don't. We could walk to work if we live in the same town. A lot of people live a half a mile from work and they drive. The car does the work for them, does their bidding for them.
Yeah, there's no way people are going to walk to work.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess some people in the city, I know downtown Chicago, they, Yeah. So a lot of people don't have cars. They walk or take the train or whatever.
Yeah, they take the train. But we have. They could leave 30 minutes earlier and walk to work, but they don't.
Yeah.
They take the train 4 stops.
Yeah.
Side tangent.
I feel like walks are so underestimated.
Oh my God. It's basic adventuring 101.
Yeah.
I walk as my core adventuring when I'm overseas. Like, I got to Vieste 7 days early. Nobody was here yet.
Awesome.
Nobody from Human Fit was here. Maurizio wasn't even here yet. And I'm out wandering around blocks and looking at points in the distance and walking down and finding that point in the distance, because I believe that mental mapping is a key human skill that has really degenerated since the advent of Apple Maps, because you always have a map in your phone. Most people can't even identify north.
Dude, right? I used to be called the human GPS when I was like in my late teens, early 20s.
Yeah.
And when I was going up, the fuck?
Oh, that was just the wind moving that door.
I was going to bars. We didn't have GPS at the time, and I knew how to get from bar to bar.
You always knew how to get there.
Yeah, without anything. Now, I will attest to this. Since I used my GPS basically for everything, that muscle has atrophied like fucking crazy. And if the world does come to an end...
We're all lost.
Well, it's crazy. But yeah, you're right. Not a lot of people can identify the direction of north.
Even the difference between being in a car and being on a motorcycle is massive. Like, if you're on a motorcycle, you learn drastically more about your environment and you remember a lot more.
Yeah.
If you're on a bike, you even do even more than that. But I think the motorcycle is the main thing. All right, so back to the thing.
The 10 movement patterns. Swinging heavy clubs.
Lifting and carrying is the one that we kind of do in the gym, right? Mm-hmm. You deadlift is a lift. A back squat is a lift. A bench press is a lift. But that is one fraction of this overall human thing that people should be good at.
Mm.
I utilize the theory that people are just generally not good at standing up, which is why they don't have success with a lot of these athletic training programs. So I teach people kettlebells. There are 6 basic moves of kettlebells. They all inevitably, if run long enough on accident, will make you better at standing up. They have cross-body stability in them, which mimics the load without a lot of complexity that the body will eventually need to be able to do things like run and jump. But it's a perfectly controlled system that's economical that you can do inside of your house that you can do forever. Then the other thing that I talk about is clubbing, and that is in the throwing category. And the throwing category is, once again, entirely almost left out of human fitness. You have some like med ball power exercises that they might do in like NASM level 7 power training, but they're ridiculous. They're absolutely ridiculous, and they are not throwing in any way. Throwing patterns encompass this massive thing of human movement. They encompass the use of all tools, swinging hammers, shovels, axes, everything that has built human civilization over the course of the last 5,000 years, and probably a lot longer than that, has been based on the fact that humans have thumbs, they hold onto levers, the shoulder allows you to swing a lever, that works in conjunction with your core, goes across your body in an X pattern, through your hip, through your knee, down into your ankle. That's also left out of all of modern training.
I was gonna say that, you know, as I got educated throughout the last 15 years, the first three when I did personal training school and university, I don't remember ever learning about the body from this perspective.
Yeah, nobody talks about it.
It just gets right into like what the skeleton is and where the muscles attach and originate and different types of movement patterns.
Completely useless movement, completely useless for your average individual to actually improve their life. Good information from a scientific perspective to know where the muscle attaches, but that's really leaving out the thing that makes humans human, which is throwing shit.
Yeah, it's very interesting.
So at this seminar, we've had kettlebells, which I think are a great way to get people to stand up, lifting, which leads to better carrying. We had clubs, which is the perfect way to train throwing pattern from light to complex, a multi-year system that you can never see the end of. If you think that you've run into the edge of clubbing, you're lying to yourself. You should probably just get a heavier club or learn to turn a different direction. Club swinging takes throwing patterns and puts them in an infinite complexity, and you can have an infinite amount of foot movement patterns, which is the origin of all things like martial arts, which once again define humanity. And then today we had something like landmine. landmine is lifting and carrying with forward intent. So kettlebells, you're getting really good at standing up, but you're still lifting straight up and straight down. With clubs, you're getting really good at rotating about your vertical axis, the movement of yawing, the thing that defines humanity. Landmine has the same crossbody load that you would get in kettlebells, but instead of taking it vertical, you put it into that Michael Jackson forward lean from the ankle drive up, and you create pressure up through the foot, which is something that you see mimicked in things like dance all the time, because dance is perfectly natural movement. So all of these things are linking together, and they're taking the stuff that's kind of not being taught well anywhere else out of the original 10 things, and it's taking lifting and carrying and making it a useful skill so that you could actually get to these other ideas, and then creating that forward intent. Combining something like kettlebells, clubs, and landmine together is basically a foolproof concept. If you did any program with those three things, you would inevitably get better at the core fundamental human, fundamental aspects that define your, define you as a human. Because movement does define humans. Am I saying this right?
Yeah.
I'm saying this right.
Yeah, you are.
The weeds? No, I'm saying it right.
This is good. This is good. Because, like, I just want to look at exercise from this perspective. It just makes everything more exciting as far as, like, you know, personally exercising and having a good time teaching. Like, I don't know that I can do my job 6 hours a day, whatever, let's say 30 to 40 hours a week doing basic conventional lifting. It gets boring.
I could not do that to myself, nor would I do that to people who gave me money.
Yeah, I fell out of love with exercise. For that,
I would feel bad. I would feel bad. I would not be able to look at myself.
Yeah. Yeah. I fell out of love with exercise after college football, and I really tried, and I was a kicker and punter, and it was a really important goal to me to be the best kicker and punter possible and see if I can try to compete with the professionals, the next level. I really wanted to try to do that. So throughout that process, I've tried to figure out different training programs, different training protocols that were going to help me get there. And I did everything that all the other football players did. Heavy snatches, cleans, deadlifts, squats, heavy bench. At my senior year, I tried to get my bench up as high as possible. So, you know, in the combine, they do 225 and they do it for reps. I got to 18 reps before my senior season, thinking that this extra strength. Now, I was doing hot yoga. I wasn't doing like any of the mobility drills that I've been practicing the last 5 years. But I thought that because I was lifting all this heavier weight and then from time to time stretching my body, consistently kicking, blah, 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 that I was going to have more power and more accuracy. None of it really translated in the power aspect. And I felt like I was just like overdoing it and having a lot of pain in my hips and in my knees, and nothing translated. However, like after that was over, I didn't want to train like that anymore. It got so fucking boring, and I didn't want to like just teach this to people, and I didn't feel passionate about it. And I fell out of love with it, and I stopped training for a little while, you know, and I put all my marbles in a different version of teaching career, you know, but now coming across all these other movements, I've seen it in myself that I'm so much better mover. I told you today that I probably would have been a hell of a lot, better kicker if I was doing stuff like clubs and mace swings and landmine exercises with that forward intent. And
I love coming to things like this because we come up with new ideas and new understanding. A lot of you guys have been doing landmine longer than me because I've been on the road for 3 years, so I didn't have a place to do it nor a place to examine the idea. But here we've been here talking trash about training and about everything for the last, what, 4 or 5 days. And today I solidified my understanding of where it fits inside the concept. For me, kettlebells are, let's start economic. They're economical. Like a $250 to $300 competition adjustable kettlebell is absolutely the best money you could possibly spend on health and fitness. You can stand up with it. You get up off the ground. You have your 6 basic moves. You have an infinite number of rotations you can do once you get good at it. But I consider kettlebells to be endurance weightlifting, which most people don't treat it that way. They treat it as pure power training. I treat it as endurance weightlifting because I think that humans are meant to pick up a pack and walk 10 miles across unlevel ground with it. And then I fill in that concept. I've moved, normally the way people think of it is clubs is light endurance work and kettlebells are heavy power work. Mm-hmm. I flip that. I think kettlebells are your intermediate weight endurance weightlifting that builds a core fundamental work capacity of your body. I think that the clubs should be your giant pure rotational power. And I think that the landmine now fills in something that I was looking for a way to truly fix.
Okay.
The Olympic lifting is a great idea at its core concept. Deadlift, clean, hang clean.
Overhead press,
split jerk, and snatch. The problem is that most people simply do not have the movement capacity to do it because they don't have the training and the fundamental drills it takes to spend, or the time to spend 2 hours a day working on those things. Yeah,
this makes it very accessible.
You could actually do a decent movement-based warm-up in 5 to 10 minutes, and you could do 3 sets of 3 with 3-minute sets and have a shit ton of useful, trackable power work in 9 minutes. You could do 5 sets of 5 inside 3-minute rounds and have 15 minutes. And you could take and now shove something like landmine into a short amount of time that allows you to work on all your other things instead of 2 hours that it takes to work on Olympic lifting. And you can have a trackable thing. You could use the same data sheets to track it because you're doing all the exact same lifts. You're just doing them in the way that the human body can actually do it. So instead of trying to get somebody who's more limited to do a barbell snatch, which is, people need years of training before they should even attempt a barbell
snatch. I've been exercising for a long time and I still can't do a real good overhead snatch.
No, neither can I, because it's psycho. It like takes a huge amount of dedication. College athletes can do it because they're working out as college athletes, basically as full-time athletes with tutors that help them get through their classes. Right. And then if you get into professional athletics, you have 8 hours a day.
Yeah.
A landmine puts all of that strength and power training into pure human movement patterns, cross body stabilization, roll of the spine, the spinal engine theory, which is the exact same theory used in kettlebells, which is the exact same theory used in heavy clubs.
Yep.
And you can get back to doing a 3x3 of number trackable data for your core lifts, for your hang clean, for your clean and jerk, and for your snatch.
It's interesting.
It's awesome.
It's interesting to me that there's so much carryover into sports. Like if you're a tennis player, lacrosse, hockey, baseball,
it's pure forward
golfer,
pressure.
You know, runner.
It's the forward lean that they try to train you to do in running, but I have yet to see a time managed program that actually can turn you into, give you the neurological adaptation to do something like sprinting well. I think that landmine has the potential to do that. And now I've added another category to the things that I think are most useful. I always say kettlebells and clubs are of equal importance. You start with whichever one you have access to first. Usually it's kettlebells because there's more kettlebells on the planet than there are clubs. But I think the category that I would put after that now is probably landmine or hydrocore. Right, hydro core really fits inside of club swinging, right? But because there's no lever, there's no balance point, it moves faster. So I put it in the same category as heavy club swinging, as something that you could track, move up in weight, build entire programs around, but it moves at a faster rate. Landmine provides that forward pressure. I can't think of anything that does forward pressure the way that landmine does.
Yeah.
But forward pressure is all sprinting dynamics. Sprinting dynamics goes right back into our 10 core things that define humanity. Run fast, good is definitely something that defines humanity.
For sure. All right, man. Well, this was good. We just warmed up.
We did a whole hour. Did we do a whole hour?
We did a whole hour.
God, we're nerds. Let's get some more people in here.
These guys are ready to go. We're gonna do another one. But let's end with why you like the hydro core so much.
And I like the hydro core the same reason that everybody talks about Maurizio, because it is a super light travel option that does human rotation incredibly well, right? If you put your heels on the ground and you rotate and you do circles in any direction, you can do inside cleans, outside cleans. Inside cleans and outside cleans can be trained with clubs the best. Kettlebells, kind of second best. But HydroCore fits in there for outside clean, but it has a lot more room for air when teaching because you're not swinging a giant chunk of iron past your knee. If you mess it up, you're not going to die. It's light. You take the water out of the bag, right? You fold it up. You put it in your backpack. You can go anywhere in the world. Side effect is if you truly adventure, fill that son of a bitch up with water. And so you simple. Have 5 gallons of water that you can carry on a U-shaped thing on your neck. If you're going up in the mountains, ironically, HydroCore is an amazing thing. Maurizio actually has a screw-on filter for it as well now. So you could actually turn it into a compressible U-shaped water bag that you can put on top of your backpack that drapes forward over your neck. You can actually adventure. It oddly is a brilliant adventure tool. Yeah. So I love it. I think that it's great. I'm going to continue to talk about it. I need to make a bunch more videos on it. I sat down and started writing a whole program. I thought we might shoot it here in Vieste, but we have not been super consistent on our filming. We have been having too much fun to truly film effectively, but we're coming up with great ideas. So that's kind of the point.
I would love to see more Mark Wildman videos on HydroCore for sure. Because I think you definitely, like I was always confused when I first started using the HydroCore, like what would be the best way to use it? What's the most optimal way to use it? And then when I started watching more of your videos, the clubs and the HydroCore motion patterns, movement patterns are definitely complementary. I mean, they're the same ones. And
well, I teach people club and teaching them HydroCore because of the weird triple extension thing that you do with your shoulder in order to roll it, teaches people a version of grace that they did not otherwise know.
Okay.
So I like to teach club, I like to teach mace, I like to teach HydroCore because it teaches people grace in rotation, and it's not just about power. Humans do grace. We do grace. That is what defines us. Power, swinging levers, and an ability to be graceful, which means to exert the right force at the right amount of time and to accelerate and decelerate weight. There's more fancy versions of what define human grace, but if you teach somebody clubs, they will learn grace on accident. If you teach people mace, they will learn grace on accident. If you teach them HydroCore, they will learn grace on accident. If you teach them all three, you change somebody's life forever. There's no way out. You cannot forget what you have learned. Your brain is different.
I like to say finesse is another grace. Version of strength. You know, it's like strong and, you know, throwing a 48 kg kettlebell is great, but it's not the end all be all. And it's not always the end goal. We need to be finesse in life. We need to be fluid in ways that we transition just from, you know, life to the next version of life and the next thing that you're doing, right? We want to be fluid. We want to make sure that we're doing it gracefully and with finesse for sure, dude. So that's exactly a whole hour. Mark Wildman, thank you for doing the Danny Cola podcast for the second time.
Yes, sir.
And that's great. Let's get these two guys in here next.